This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. Hello, hello, hello. Thank you very much once again for joining me, J. Lewis Mills. You are now on the level with J. Lewis Mills. As always, I hope you all had a very good week. We are in this third week of 2018, and unfortunately, you know, it seems like what we ended with 2017, we are bringing into 2018. So I am hoping that at some point we as a people do wake up and we do realize enough is enough. I mean that in the most positive way that I can. But, you know, we are, you know, seeing some very bad times right now. And, you know, I have with me tonight as a guest once again. He took time out of his very busy schedule with, you know, everything's going on in the government right now. But I have today on the show Shadow Senator Michael D. Brown. I am very happy to have him on the show. Just want to get right into it as I do every week because we have a lot of information I feel we need to cover. So first and foremost, let me please be honored and grateful and humbled to welcome to my show once again, Senator Michael D. Brown. How are you doing, Senator Brown?
What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about a lot, but the first thing I would like to do is, you know, for my listeners, and let me just give this little bit of a side note. Every week that I do my show, I hear the numbers, and I'm always told that I have more listeners that week than I did the previous week. So first, let me thank everyone that does tune in to On the Level, either by going to the archives or by listening to me live. So I just want to set a little bit of a foundation first. My first question to you, Senator Brown, is if you can explain to my listeners exactly what a shadow senator is.
Well, shadow senator actually is a nickname. My title is United States Senator, like the senators from the 50 states, but unfortunately, I'm not from a state. I'm from the District of Columbia. So in the Constitution of the United States, the District of Columbia is put under the control of Congress, and Congress took our representation away in 1801, and many jurisdictions that attempted to become states used what were called shadow senators. They elected two United States senators, and those people would lobby for them to become a state. And actually, everybody that's used that plan, called the Tennessee Plan, because that's where it was first used, has actually become a state. So in 1991, the District of Columbia created these offices, United States Senator, to lobby for statehood for the district, and that's what I do. I don't have a vote in Congress, and that's why they call me shadow. And now, there used to be only two shadow senators from the District of Columbia, but now there are four, because Puerto Rico has just appointed. Now, they've appointed their senators. They weren't elected, and you may know, J. Lewis, that until the Constitution was amended, senators were appointed by the governor. They're now elected. But so Puerto Rico went back to the idea of appointing their senators. But now there's shadow senators as well from Puerto Rico. And their job would be the same as mine, to try to make Puerto Rico a state. And the reason we want to, both of jurisdictions want to be states, is because that would make us equal. We would get voting representation in both houses, which we don't have. We would have budget autonomy, control over our own money, control over our own legal system. And we don't have that right now, and neither does Puerto Rico. Now, there are a few differences. Puerto Rico doesn't pay federal income taxes on money that's made in Puerto Rico. We, of course, pay taxes and serve in the military and do everything every other American citizen does. So a shadow senator is a senator, basically, who lobbies on behalf of his constituents, but doesn't have a vote in Congress.
Okay, and you kind of answered my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is your position appointed, or is your position an elected position?
Well, my position is an elected position. And in fact, in the last election, I got 207,000 votes, which is more votes than several senators that have a vote in the Senate. So my position is elected, and they've always been elected, except in Puerto Rico where they just appointed them. So okay. So my position is elected, but it doesn't have to be elected, I guess is the appropriate answer.
Okay. Now that we set that baseline of who exactly I'm speaking to, I feel like it will give more validity to the answers that you give to my question. So my first question for you, Senator Brown, is what was the reason for the government shutdown, and what exactly does that mean for the listeners that don't really understand what a government shutdown is?
Well, you know, Congress has to approve a budget, and the government has shut down, as you probably remember, on a couple of occasions now. This has been a more recent development. I don't know of any government shutdowns that go way back in history, but certainly it's shut down three times in the last four or five administrations. And basically what happens is that the government is shut down because Congress can't agree to approve a budget for the country. So with no budget, we can't move forward. And basically what happened last week, the reason the government was shut down, was that they're in the middle of negotiating some very, very tough things on Capitol Hill, and both sides became intractable for a while. Neither one of them was going to move until the other one moved. So they shut down the government because they couldn't reach agreement. Now, when the government shuts down, it doesn't completely shut down. I mean, essential services don't shut down, but a lot of important things can be shut down. People don't get their Social Security checks. Military people don't get paid. Certain services are no longer extended because there's no money to pay for them. So what they've done is they've done what's called a CR, a continuing resolution, which means that they're going to pay for the government for the next 3 weeks. And hopefully they're going to negotiate what they need to negotiate over the next 3 weeks so they can keep the government open. Or if not, the government will shut down again.
Okay. Now, my next question, Senator, it might be, some people might say it's a little controversial, but, you know, it's my show, so I'm going to ask it.
All right. Be controversial.
Why has President Trump been able to stay in office? We're just getting, you know, we're just, today is what, the 24th? So we're basically 4 days ahead of him being in office for a year. He took office, if I'm not mistaken, January 20th of 2017. Uh-huh. So why has President Trump been able to stay in office this long? And the reason I ask that question, or to give a little more to that question, and I completely understand that this is, you know, the United States of America, this is not a business. But if my listeners could think of any corporation, think of an Amazon, think of a Google, think of any big corporation, if there is as much controversy, and if there is as much displeasure as there has been with our current sitting president, I believe that, that the president of that company would have been removed. So why, and I guess this is more of an opinionated question, but why has President Trump been able to stay in office this long?
Well, you know, the only way you can remove the president, you can't remove the president for being controversial. You can't remove him for being incompetent, but you can remove him for what's called high crimes and misdemeanors. That's what the Constitution says. High crimes and misdemeanors. Now that's a pretty open-ended description of what he can be removed for, right? I mean, a misdemeanor,
yes.
We all know that, you know, you can get a traffic ticket and that's a misdemeanor. So really, he could be removed at any time, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him removed in the near future. I don't know that he will be, but he certainly could be. In fact, one of the presidents that was impeached, and that's the process by which you remove the president, impeachment, there's two ways you can remove him. He can be impeached, or he can be declared incompetent and removed under the Constitution. For impeachment can be for just about anything. Andrew Johnson, who was president after Lincoln was assassinated, was impeached because he fired a postal worker. And in those days, postal workers, the higher up ones, had tenure. So he got impeached over the violation of the Tenure of Office Act because he fired a postmaster he didn't like. So it doesn't take a whole lot to get impeached sometimes. But it has to be brought by Congress. And right now, the president's party controls Congress. So they're not likely to move to impeach. It's a little more difficult. In fact, this is the first time we've ever had a government shutdown where one party controlled both houses of Congress and the White House. That's very unusual. So there are people that talk about impeachment on Capitol Hill. I don't think it's out of the question, but it hasn't happened yet because they haven't decided that the president's committed any crimes.
Can you name for myself, or can you speak to me as well as my listeners about anything good? And I mean, this is a very open question, but you're a senator, so you would have the answer. Can you name anything good that has come out of the Trump administration over the last year and 4 months?
Well, you know what, Jay Lewis, if you're asking me, let's be clear of the question. If you're asking me, is there anything good that he's done that I can think of, the answer to that would be, I really can't think of anything off the top of my head. But if you're saying to me what good has happened, I think there have been a few good things that have happened. Look, it depends on the way you look at it. Look at the Me Too movement of all these women that have come out. Now, did this start when we had those terrible tapes with the president and Billy Bush and those things that he said on the air, and women started to stand up against that? Is that something that has really been brought about by, you know, by his presidency? I don't know. And if it is, I would argue that at least has something to do with women standing up, and I would think that's a positive thing. Of course, he points to some of the positive things too. If you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average is just going crazy. The stock market's going crazy. It's hit a new high every, you know, day for about a month. It keeps on hitting new highs every day. So that would be another positive thing economically that's happened. How much credit you want to give him for that, I don't know. He likes to take all the credit. But there have been some positive things that have come out of this. And, you know, even more recently with this CR, and we'll see in the next 3 weeks whether they can work things out. But there has been a little more cooperation on Capitol Hill between Republicans and Democrats. So, I mean, I don't paint it as bleak a picture as mm-hmm. some people might, although I mean, I've never seen a president like this ever in the history of America. I think the man's an embarrassment, to tell you the truth.
Do you think that there's anything concrete to be said about, you know, because before President Trump took office, I believe, and I hope I have my information correct, I believe we were the number two destination for people to visit as well as have their business conventions. We have now been replaced with Spain as being the number two place that people want to vacation or people want to have their business meetings or their business conventions. Do you think that is directly, you know, I heard reports that, you know, it was, or when I researched reports that it was directly connected to President Trump taking office. Do you think, you know, in that aspect, as far as us being a world leader, do you think that President Trump taking office has been more of a detriment to the United States and the United States people as a whole? Or do you think that's just conjecture?
I think that it's a little of both. I think there is, I think that is a little bit of conjecture, but I think there's a lot of truth in it. Certainly our position is changing in the world. I mean, we've heard many of our staunch allies, the British, you know, mm-hmm. he was just supposed to go over there and dedicate the new CIA headquarters, and he canceled his trip. And he said mm-hmm. he canceled his trip because it was a bad deal. It wasn't actually a bad deal. It was a good deal. But the Brits said that he canceled it because of all the protests that were planned. We just saw these, again, women come out and protest over the weekend, not only here in the United States, but all over the world. They're doing
yes, sir.
So yes, we've lost some standing in the world because of the position that he's taken internationally on some things. And you probably saw in the news yesterday that a fight broke out in the Knesset because he's moved he stood behind moving the capital of Israel. So he's done some things, yes, very provocative things that our friends around the world don't like. And so, yeah, I would say that has a lot to do with it. And, you know, he opened a hotel here in Washington. Mm-hmm. Beautiful old government building, the old post office. He leased it, I think, for 75 years, and he turned it into a hotel. Well, it's one of the most expensive hotels in Washington, but it's not doing very well.
How confident again, are you?
Because it's because people don't want to have their conventions there.
Yes. How confident are you, Senator Brown, that the government will not shut down in less than 2 weeks again? I believe the CR that was done is good for, if I'm, and again, I really hope I have my research correct, which I believe I do because I do know how to research. This current negotiation is good for 17 days, and I believe it just happened 3 days ago. So how confident are you that the government will not shut down again? And if the government does shut down again, how detrimental do you see that being as having two government shutdowns in such a short amount of time, if it happens?
Yeah, I think that would be a really bad thing because I think that it would start to shake confidence in our ability to function as a government. And that would just be a really terrible thing. You know, that would affect everything from our economy to, our standing internationally. So I think it would be a bad thing. And I think the one thing that we have going for us on this is that neither the Republicans nor the Democrats want to be blamed for doing this. So they both have an incentive to work towards resolving things. But there are some very tough issues out there. You know, DACA is a tough issue. There's childhood nutrition programs on the line. There's also border security and immigration. These are very tough issues to resolve. So they've got some tough things lying ahead in the next 3 weeks and a lot of things to resolve in that short a period of time. But I hope that they have it enough together that they will resolve these issues and keep the government open. And I think if they, you know, my guess would be if they can't resolve things quickly enough, they'll extend the CR. They'll kick the can down the road a little further. But so I think the government will stay open. But I hope that it stays open permanently, because another CR is not a good thing either.
So when President Obama was president, and I have no problem with admitting I am a registered Democrat. When President Obama was in office, and the other side was talking so bad about President Obama, and President Obama said himself, "You have to give me a chance when I'm coming to the negotiating table. You have to give me a chance to sit down. You all are telling me no before I even get in my seat." Now, I believe he meant that literally, and I do also believe he meant that figuratively. So my question to you is, with these government shutdowns, with our president's approval rating here in this country being somewhere in the 35-38 percentile, do you see that as being a security issue? And what I mean by that is, if any American citizen believes that we as Americans are the only ones that can watch the news, that can watch CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, whatever news outlet you choose to watch, if we think that Americans are the only ones that see that, then, you know, the word delusion does come into mind. So do you think with these government shutdowns and with how the American people feel about our president, do you think that that shows some level of weakness for us security-wise? And do you think that some of our biggest enemies, I'm not going to name any, but do you think that our biggest enemies would be able to see a, for a lack of better words, a loophole to be able to come in and actually hurt us as Americans? Or is our, no matter what with these government shutdowns and no matter what with the way we feel about the president as a whole in this country, our security is still number one, it's still tight, and it's still great?
Well, I think we have great security. I think that, you know, one of the wonderful things about our government is that we don't have one person in control of everything. You know, there's a balance of power, and there's also an apparatus, a security apparatus in America that functions regardless of who's in the White House, regardless of what the politics are. So I think basically our security is very sound. But you do make a really important point here, Jay Lewis, that you know, your enemies look at you and see this as a weakness, see your disorganization, see your this confrontation between parties, see what looks like a house that's not in order. I think that it does embolden them, We certainly are trying to get to the bottom right now of the whole Soviet thing, the whole Russian interference with our election. And we know that there are Russian bots out there right now that are spreading all sorts of misinformation and stuff over the Internet. And I think they're doing it because they're trying to exacerbate that division that they see in America. And they do see that as an opportunity. But I will say that, you know, we have just very dedicated, we have a very dedicated military, and we have a very dedicated a security force in America when you consider things like the CIA and the FBI and you know, the professionals at Homeland Security and the professionals that work on security every day. So I wouldn't feel unsafe. But I think you make an important point that this is not a good thing, and that, yes, our enemies will try to exploit it.
And you spoke about it a little bit, but I would like to go a little more in depth. If there were to be another government shutdown, and if it were to last longer than 3 days, ultimately, and I'm asking this, I'm asking your personal as well as your professional opinion, ultimately, who really suffers the most from a government shutdown?
Well, those people that suffer the most are those people that depend most on the government. So one group would be government employees, you know, the rank and file people that live check to check, people like military people. You know, we don't, you know, nobody's getting rich by being a soldier. So a lot of these people live from week to week, paycheck to paycheck, so they hurt. Then people that are on assistance, and that would be everything from people that get Social Security, who may not be getting their Social Security check, to people that get government assistance in terms of federal programs like food stamps and aid to families with dependent children. And then the next on the list would be local governments that depend on the federal government for subsidies. So it depends on how long it goes on, but immediately the people that are hurt are the people that get a government check, like soldiers and government employees or Social Security recipients, Medicaid, Medicare, aid to families with dependent children, food stamps, all these people, because those services are cut off. So those are the people that hurt most. And, you know, that's always the way it is. Poor people take the brunt of things when you have any kind of turn down in economic activity, whether it's a shutdown of the government or a bad economy or whatever it is. The people on the bottom of the ladder always suffer most, I think. But the people that, it depends on how closely you're tied to a government check as to how much it hurts and how quick it hurts.
Do you believe, Senator Brown, and thank you for that answer, do you believe that, and I'm really not trying to beat a dead horse, and I'm really not trying to paint you into a corner. However, if the military doesn't get paid during a government shutdown, as we just spoke about, as our enemies watching and seeing what's going on, do you feel confident that if there were to be a long-standing government shutdown, do you feel confident that our military would still work without a paycheck, or would that go to us as American people being able to, you know, have the right to not feel as secure?
Well, first of all, let me say that I think that the military is made up of people that are dedicated to protecting America. And I don't think it has anything to do with money for them. But it's obviously going to have an effect on morale. If you're putting your life on your line for your country, and you're not being able to pay your mortgage or feed your children or you know, do the other things you need to do as a parent, as a spouse, as a member of our society, then, yeah, it's going to affect morale, especially if it's long term. But I don't think that any, I can't imagine a soldier that wouldn't stand up for America just because they didn't get a paycheck. I think our the people that serve in our armed forces, especially since it's a voluntary service, there's not a draft, these are people that are committed to defending America, and I think that's what they would do. I got to tell you that my experience in working with military people is that they're just among the most honorable people out there. So, you know, we've seen this time and time again where people that have this kind of dedication, first responders, police officers, people that you know, rush into. We've just seen it in California with all the terrible mudslides and everything else and forest fires. You know, these people are dedicated people that do it because they want to protect America and they want to serve America. So I think the paycheck for them is a secondary thing, but that doesn't mean it's not important. It is important to them. And I think if there's long-term problems like this in them getting paid, yes, it definitely will take a toll, and I think we'll see it in the amount of people that are willing to serve and do other things. But I don't think the American people will stand for that either. I don't think the American people will stand for our military not being paid for long periods of time, you know, things like that. I think that people in the United States, American citizens, understand that our freedom isn't free and that these people stand up for us every day. And I think in the end, the American citizens will stand up for them as well and put pressure on Congress to resolve things so that that doesn't happen.
And let me just say, I absolutely agree with you. I don't want anybody to think that I am trying to paint a bad picture about our military. Me personally, I do believe our military would still work. I do believe our military should still fight. But I absolutely would be one of those Americans that spoke up and did say something to our current government about you really need to get your stuff together, because these people are putting their lives on the line every day that they go out to protect us. So I don't want anybody to think that I am, that question had anything to do with me not believing in the military. I absolutely believe in the military.
Well,
I have friends, family members. I really 100% believe in our military.
Well, and that's the thing, right, Jay Lewis, that we all have friends, we all have family that serve, and people that are connected to these people serve as well, right? Women whose husbands are deployed, they serve. They serve at home. They take care of their children by themselves. They tend to be very patriotic people. They worry. You know, my brother was an F-111 pilot, and even though he flew mostly during peacetime, we worried about him every day he was out there. We worried, you know, because he was in harm's way. So, yes, I think that you're right. I think we all pretty much believe in our military. And, and you know, even those of us that hate war, I hate the idea of war, but I love soldiers. And I think that's a very typical American thing, that even if you're somebody that wants to stay out of conflicts, doesn't want American troops deployed, you know, they say the most patriotic thing you can do is keep troops at home. So, but I think, yes, I think your sentiment about how you feel about the military is a very typical sentiment in America. And that's why I think that if push came to shove, we would all stand up and say, no, enough is enough.
Now, my next question, Senator Brown, I have to give a little bit of setup to, but in my setup, I don't want the thought pattern to be thought that I believe the government should be run. I'm going to talk about football teams, and I'm also going to talk about companies or corporations. But getting back to the point of whether our current sitting president were to be impeached, if our current president is to be impeached and taken out of office, you know, the next one up is going to be the vice president, which clearly, and you know, everybody understands that the vice president of the United States is a member of the current president's administration. So the way I see it is, and well, let's take a professional sports team. Let's take a football team. If the head coach is fired, more often than not, all of the coaches are, unless one of those, which, you know, you do see happen, all of the coaches are fired as well. They'll come in with a whole new regime. Is it really doing anything if a sitting president is removed from office, but his administration is still able to keep their jobs? Wouldn't it? Isn't that still kind of like, okay, you just have a different person, you just have a different person pushing the same agenda. Is it not a fair statement or a fair thought to think if a president of the United States is impeached that his whole administration should be impeached as well? Help me understand why that's not a fair statement.
Well, one thing that's different is that when you hire me to be the coach of your football team, I bring in a whole team with me.
Yes.
And that's similar to what happens in government, except for this, is that I don't really hire the vice president. The vice president is nominated, elected, and he has his own team, as a matter of fact. So if Trump was out of the White House, you would see many of the top people in the White House out with him. He wouldn't just leave, and then Jared Kushner would still be there, and
okay,
Ivanka Trump would still be there, and Jeff Sessions would still be there. No, a lot of those people would be replaced. A lot of people serve at the pleasure of the president. The very top people in government serve at the pleasure of the president. So you don't have a job when the president leaves, unless the new president says he wants you to have the job. So you don't automatically, it's not like, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is the press secretary. She isn't automatically the press secretary under Mike Pence. Mike Pence has
okay
to decide whether he wants her or not. And what will happen is that when Trump leaves, a lot of the people around him will be forced to leave as well. So it's not exactly that clear cut. But you're right that it doesn't change, you know, it doesn't change the agenda necessarily. It doesn't change, you know, it doesn't change the government, the way the government's moving necessarily. No.
Okay.
You still have, and many people say that. They say, look, you know, Democrats who lament having Donald Trump as president, many of them say, well, I don't know how much better Mike Pence would be. You know? So that's you make a valid point.
I absolutely thank you for educating me on that. I will be honest and say I didn't know to what degree that happened, so I absolutely thank you for setting me straight on that. So
if you look at somebody like Richard Nixon, when mm-hmm he left, all these top people left with him. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
I believe we have a caller. Is that what you were saying, Doug? We have a caller?
You do.
Okay. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from? And thank you for calling.
Lily from New York.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jay. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. And what is your question or comment?
I have a question to Senator Brown.
Mm-hmm.
It was regarding, you actually mentioned regarding the shutdown of the government. do you think, Senator Brown, that his tweets, his comments, like when they actually signed and they went, you know, and the shutdown ended, that his the Trump's common tweet when he said the Democrats cave, if there is ever another shutdown, will that be an issue that Democrats or whoever the voters are against, you know, for making a vote because they'll come out with a dumb tweet like they caved?
Well,
I don't know if I'm...
I mean,
you understand real,
really, the important question, I think, is how that makes you feel. If you know what I mean? What kind of impact that has on the voters. I think a lot of people take the president's tweets and don't even really pay much attention to them anymore because they're so erratic and they're so all over the place. They're not helpful. They're not helpful to the process, as far as I can see. I don't think that people, just because he's tweeted this out, that people believe it, number one. And number two, I think they now have realized, after a year of this, that this is his modus operandi to keep chaos. You know, he likes the confusion. He likes the people being pitted against one another. It keeps the attention on him, and it takes some of the attention off the negative things that are going on, like the Russian investigation. So I think he likes to do the tweets because he uses them to his best advantage. But I also think that, you know, it's like the old adage about the boy that cried wolf, right? Mm-hmm. After a while, it just becomes background noise, and people stop paying attention to it, I really think. I think the only people, just to be perfectly honest with you, and this is a very good question, by the way, but
yes,
I think that the only people that really pay attention to this are his base. He's playing to his base. You know, and I think that a lot of people, instead of looking for the truth, I think a lot of people just go out and try to find things that support the way they feel or support their prejudices. So this, the people that, the, you know, his core supporter, the 35% that Jay was talking about at the beginning of the show, I think those are the people that listen to the tweets. I think the rest of us just see it as background noise. So I don't think it has that much effect, to be honest with you.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for your answer.
Yeah, thank you
thank
for the
you
question.
Very much for your question. So getting back to this, Senator Brown, in your professional, when I ask your opinion, Senator, I'm asking both your professional as well as your personal, because of your status, I believe it is fair for me to ask your professional as well as your personal opinion. In your opinion, why do you think there is such a cloud, a dark cloud over our current administration? Kind of going along with the question our caller had.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that's most that I found most disturbing about the statistics that came out of the election was that the majority of people that voted for President Trump, 25% of them thought that he was incapable of doing the job. 25% of the people that voted for him said, I don't think he's qualified for the job, but I'm going to vote for him anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, because they were dissatisfied with the way that the government was going, the way things were being run. And you know what? I've been a lifelong Democrat, but I have to say that I don't think the Democrats have really caught on to this yet, that things need to change, that they need to reach out to all these dissatisfied people in the country and they need to feel the pain that these people feel. And but I don't want to digress here. To answer your question,
sure.
I just think that we're seeing that he's not qualified. You know, there's people out there, Jay, that said, we want the government run like a business.
Yes.
Well, the government can't be run like a business. That's
no.
why you have government. If business could do everything, you wouldn't need government. But
mm-hmm.
but what people really are saying when they say that is we'd like to see the efficiency of business employed with government. We'd like to see, you know, certain elements. But this is a man with no experience. Look, he's running the most powerful country in the world. He has no experience of this.
Yes,
he has
he does
people
not.
That he has people that followed him into office that have no experience at this. And I think you're starting to see this, and this is the cloud very much that's hanging over government. You know, we saw this thing, to bring it back to the shutdown, we saw
mm-hmm.
this thing this week where Republicans were saying, we don't know where to go with this because he keeps on changing his mind. And he keeps on tweeting this and saying that and then changing it, and, you know, and he's all over the place. Well, I think that's a misunderstanding of how the government works. And he also, you know, it came out today that he asked the assistant director of the FBI who he voted for.
Yes.
I think that it's because he thinks he's the big boss, and he really is the boss, but he's not. But it's not the same as being the head of Trump Corporation. You know, when you're the president of your own corporation, whatever you say goes. But that's not how the government works. You have a balance of power between the courts, the Congress, and the president, the executive branch. So there are many bosses in Washington, and there have to be negotiations, and there have to be you know, lines of communication that are open, and there has to be cooperation. I don't think he gets that, and I think that's the cloud more than anything that's hanging over government right now. And also some of the remarks he's made. I mean, he's just, you know, it's different when you say something, Jay, and I say something, compared
yes.
to when he says something. Because when he says something, no matter what his intent, it means so much more. They hang on every word that the president says. And he just says some horrible things.
Yes, he does. Do you think, Senator Brown, do you think that President Trump trusts the FBI?
I don't know because of the things he said. But I'll tell you what I think. I think he thinks the FBI works for him. And they don't.
Yes, and they don't.
They work for
no,
the American people. And you know what? I think if you ask the average FBI agent, that's what he'd tell you. I think, you know, he would say, I may serve the president. He may be, you know, my commander-in-chief. But I work for justice, and I work for the American people. And it's more important whether he trusts the FBI or not. I think the American people trust the FBI.
I want to, my next question, again, I have to do a little bit of setup because President Trump's, a reporter asked President Trump if, you know, this whole interview that the president said he is looking forward to doing with Special Counsel Bob Mueller. A reporter asked him, do you have a problem or will you do this under oath? And I just want to clear something up. And correct me if I'm wrong, Senator, but when you're doing an interview, that's not under oath. Nobody ever does an interview under oath. The oath comes when you're actually in front of the grand jury. And what President Trump kept saying was, did Hillary do it under oath. And unfortunately, the reporter said, I don't know, which had to have been one of the, and I'm just going to say, it had to have been one of the worst answers you could give to someone like President Trump. And he, you know, he kind of blasted her. He said, you know, if you don't know whether or not Hillary Clinton did her interview with the special counsel that she did under oath, then you have no business being a reporter. I got to tell you, I kind of agree with that. But I think he was muddying the waters because nobody that does an interview with a special counsel is put under oath. You don't get put under oath until you are actually in front of the grand jury. However, when he said that, not soon after that, you know, his law team, his legal team, rather, to speak correctly, his legal team kind of walked that back a little bit. So as a senator, shadow or not, I really don't care. But as a senator, do you believe that President Trump really is looking forward to sitting across from special counsel Bob Mueller and his team? Do you believe that Bob Mueller's team is as corrupt as Fox News wants to try and say they are? And do you think it would be in the president's best interest to go ahead and have this interview with special counsel Bob Mueller and his team?
Well, first let me say that Bob Mueller has an impeccable reputation in Washington. And mm-hmm. that is among Democrats and Republicans. And mm-hmm. that's very, very unusual. It's very unusual that both sides speak highly of somebody. So as far as him being corrupt, I think that's just absurd. I think that he's one of the most honest and upstanding people out there, and he was an excellent choice for this job because of that. Because mm-hmm. if you did have somebody that was seen as partisan or easily swayed or corrupt, then the whole process wouldn't work, right? Nobody would have any faith in it. So that's number one. I think it's absolutely absurd to say that Bob Mueller is corrupt or that the FBI is corrupt and have to get President Trump. I don't believe that's true. That's number one. Number two, I wouldn't want to go in front of Bob Mueller if I were the, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
I wouldn't want to do it. And I think you're right. Hillary Clinton was under oath when she testified before Congress, because Congress has the same power to subpoena that a court does. So she was under oath, but not necessarily when she was interviewed. So. That's kind of a gray area. I don't think he is under. I don't think he is under oath. But when you testify before Congress, if you lie to Congress, it's perjury, just like if you lie in court. So you are under oath. You are under oath when you testify for Congress. But I don't think it's gotten that far. I think Mueller wants to talk to him. You know, just like they might call you in, or call me in and call me a person of interest, you know, where I haven't mm-hmm. been charged with anything and I haven't gone before a jury, but I just happened to be at the scene of the crime. So they want to talk to me to see if I was involved. And I think that's what we're really talking about here when you're talking about Mueller asking the having the president testify. I think he's trying to piece together a case where they may bring charges. And then if charges are brought, it's a whole different story.
Exactly. Now, we are running towards the end, and I just have a couple of more questions. One, that I'll save the longer answer for the last question, but I believe it was yesterday or the day before, Senator Johnson, Ron Johnson, He made a statement that there are secret societies within the FBI, but he kind of, his tone and his tune kind of changed on that the very next day. Do you believe, Senator Brown, that there are secret societies, so to speak, in the FBI?
You know, I would have to have a clearer definition of what he meant by that. But no, I think that agencies have a culture, and that there are, you know, there's a culture, but I don't think there's any secret society inside the FBI that works against either the FBI or the president or anything like that. No, I think that's ridiculous, and I think it's just, you know, another way to cast doubt upon the investigation, and that's what these guys are trying to do. They're already laying the groundwork to say whatever the investigation uncovers is somehow a conspiracy.
Okay.
But I don't believe it.
Now, my last question, and, you know, some people might say this is an unfair question to ask a senator, but, again, my show, I'm going to ask it.
All right.
Do you believe Congress as a whole, both sides, Democrat and Republican, both houses, House of Representatives and Senate, do you believe that our Congress still represents the people, or do you think our Congress is only concerned about their own personal agendas?
Well, that's a very complicated question, and I think that the answer to the question is yes in both cases. I think that the best news and the worst news about democracy are the same news, that it represents the people. And sometimes the people are very self-centered and very, you know, myopic, and so Congress tends to be that way too. But I think that Congress, by its very nature, is an institution that represents itself. I mean, just imagine this, Jay Lewis. If you had a job, and that every 2 years you were, you know, like a congressman, every 2 years you not only had to go up before your boss for a job review, but you had to go up before everybody, every client that your company ever had for a job review. And that's what these guys do. Every 2 years, they go up for a job review. So they're always interested in trying to their best to make themselves look good, to make themselves, you know, to work hard in their own self-interest, and that's a problem. And you know, and also power really does corrupt. And, you know, I've seen people go into politics with the best intentions who come out and, you know, end up doing just abusing the public trust. And I think people like that, you know, should be dealt with harshly. But yeah, it happens. So unfortunately, as maybe as unsatisfying as this answer may be, I think the answer to both questions is yes. I think they represent us. And yes, I think they represent themselves first very often.
I mean, I'm very satisfied with that answer, because to me it was honest, and I thank you, Senator Brown, for being as candid as you were. I thank you for answering all of the questions that I had for you this evening. I thank you for educating myself. I absolutely thank you for educating my listeners. And before I give my closing comments, do you have anything that you would like to leave my listeners with?
Well, I just want to say two things. I want to say, first of all, thank you, because shows like this are really important so that people can understand that there's more out there than just CNN and Fox News, that
yes,
that there's all sorts of opinions that need to be considered. So thank you for that. And two, I'd just like to say, you know, be involved, people. Be involved. Listen to shows like this. Make sure you vote. Make sure you're part of the process, because voting is how we feed our democracy, and involvement is how we make our country great. So don't just read the newspaper. Don't just sit back and converse with your neighbors. Get out there and do something.
Well, I thank you very kindly. And my final words to my listeners, you know, this is not the first show that I did about our current administration. You know, I have come out. There's been a couple of times I've actually stood on a limb all by myself when I gave a particular opinion about our current president. But if I were to give our current president any type of credit, I would have to say Donald Trump has stayed true to the person he was before taking office as to the person he still is. He was elected president. To me, that's it. He didn't change. He didn't go from being a nice, likable guy to now being the person that he is now. He was always this way. He always thought that, in my opinion, the world was under his thumb. And because of the successes that he has had in his private business dealings, that he is better than everyone else, or that he is the boss. You know, I never saw anybody, and it's not like I've seen a lot of people do this, but I've never seen anybody so proud or so happy to say you're fired. I never saw somebody in my lifetime that was so into I am great. I am the master. I am the boss. I've never seen anybody like that. But we as America, now I didn't vote for him, but we as America voted him into office. And I know that I use a lot of analogies, but if anybody remembers back, I think it was in the early 2000s, there was a football coach for the Arizona Cardinals. And I remember the game. It was the game against the Chicago Bears. And nobody knew what he was talking about or understood what he said when he was in the interview. And he said, they were who we thought they were. They were who we thought they were. Well, Donald Trump is exactly who he has portrayed himself to be. I can even remember Republican nominations when he was doing the debates, and he was right in the center of the stage, and all of the politicians were on either side. If you as a Republican, or if you as a Democrat, or you as an independent want to try and tell me, oh, that didn't matter, sorry, I'm not buying it, so go sell it somewhere else. Anytime you take somebody with the thought patterns and with the mindset of a Donald Trump, and you put him in a proverbial as well as in a literal sense, you put somebody like that center stage, you are always going to have a problem. But he was elected. I'm not condoning, clearly I'm not condoning what he's doing. All I am saying is this man is exactly who we thought he was. I think one of the biggest reasons why Donald Trump was elected was because he is a billionaire. He is a businessman. Now, again, I don't know too many successful businessmen or women that have gotten to the status of being a billionaire by being above board all the time. I don't know any businessmen or women that have made their business 100% successful. And I mean, Donald Trump isn't even 100% successful in business. But I don't know too many billionaires who have gotten there because they were Mr. Nice Guy all the time. Again, another analogy. I'm a big WWE fan. And you will hear people that have done business with Vincent Kennedy McMahon say, that guy's a bit of an asshole. He's ruffled some feathers. He has really pissed off a lot of people just for his own gain. Why would anybody think that someone like Donald Trump is going to come into office and say, and I've heard reporters and I've heard these proponents on news shows say, well, you know, I think the American people thought that he was going to take this job more seriously and he was going to be presidential. Why would you think that? Why would you think that? We're talking about Donald Trump here. Why would you think if he is given the greatest, Donald Trump was made the most powerful man in the free world, just like was said about President Obama, just like was said about President Clinton, just like was said about most every other United States president. That is the most powerful man in the free world. Why would you think that would make him get better instead of worse? So I say that to say this. In future elections, I want this to be a blueprint for us as American people. Watch, and excuse my language, Senator Brown. I'm sorry I'm about to say this just because I have that much respect for you. But what the fuck do you think was going to happen when you put somebody like Donald Trump in the presidency of the United States? If you really honestly thought that this man was going to be able to run a country the same way he runs a business, then you voted for the wrong reason, and shame on you. And I absolutely mean that. I will absolutely stand behind that. Once again, I thank Senator Brown for coming on. I am sure I am going to have Senator Brown on again next time. Senator Brown, I would really like to have Ms. Sanchez, your co-host, I would like for her to come on as well, because I don't want to keep her out of the conversation. I'm very interested in what she has to say. So again,
she has,
sir,
a lot to say, and she's a brilliant woman, and she's a Republican, and that was the idea of our show, was to have a balance, to have a Democrat and a Republican.
Well, I absolutely thank you for being here this evening. As usual, we have gone over time, but I believe it was well worth it. So I bid you all farewell. I hope you have a great week. Think about yourselves. Think about your fellow man, and let's try and just be more united as a people. Don't let a title of Republican or Democrat or Independent keep you separated. We are all here, and we all have to live together. So we all need to be more harmonious. Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.